self-denial. Did you see these? Aren't they cute? You get to take one of the... Is this... Where's Jace, my sound man? Where are we, Jace? Is this all right? Does this sound all right? Yeah. You get to take one of these home. Are you looking forward to that? The idea is actually that you put money in those and then you bring these back next week. Yeah, next week. Did you get that? Mm-hmm. Next week. Usually it's over a month. We're doing it over a week because you're such quick and good givers. So next week, bring these back. But actually, Chris said that some of you guys might like to keep these. So you can bring it back in a plastic bag, and then we pour it all into that big one there. And this goes to those people who are global gospel workers within the Baptist revolutionary movement. I'm just trying to zhuzh it up a bit. But I think Chris said you guys would like to keep one of these. Who would like to keep theirs? I'm going to keep mine, you bet. So that's why I say, just bring it back in a plastic thing and we'll chuck it all into the big... is that cool? Yeah. Just to help to introduce this, you know, Baptist global revolutionary movement, I was in the Philippines with another movement, and Ruby and I, we lived in the slums and so on, but there were a whole lot of us, and one of them was this young girl by the name of Sally at the time. And boy, you should have seen Sally. You know, she was out there kind of all alone in a squatter community. She has since returned to New Zealand. She's got married, and you know, they've been pastors in Dunedin and so forth and so on. They're now going out to Bangladesh. And so I asked Transcend, which is another name for the global revolutionary movement, I asked Transcend if we could just see a little clip of Sally. So they sent this super boring 25-minute clip, and it was absolutely boring, I thought. Hey, Carol. So I asked Carol, actually it was Lois who said it was boring. you did. And so I said to Carol, could she find the real kind of zhuzhy, sexy 3 minutes? And she did. So we're going to watch that now. I'm just trying to change the language too. Anyway, I better step down actually.
I went as a language student just to learn the
That's
language
not
and
Sally.
The culture.
Okay.
And in 1985, I was stationed at
Brahmanbaria,
working with other folk there, and we basically did evangelism out in the villages. We went out with national evangelists, and we just chatted to Muslims and Hindus, and we told them about Jesus, and I had a great time.
We went there as a married couple in 87. And my role at that time was survival, and I had to learn how to be a wife, and learn about the culture, and learn the language, and then learn about how having a baby. So there was a steep learning curve for me. We were talking about this before, and it feels like something that has put in our hearts a desire to serve overseas in Bangladesh, and it's hard to explain why it's still there, except that, and we know that it's not easy, and it's been a difficult journey contemplating leaving our children and my parents, but overriding that, there seems to be continue that work, that it's something that we are able to do, and we have an ability to do that, and we feel we would like to use those abilities and talents that God has given us, enabling us to live in a culture like Bangladesh.
At the end of 2000, we came back to New Zealand. Our children were no longer little children, they were big children, and they needed their education, we felt. So we've been back in New Zealand for 10 years now. But last year, or 2 years ago, again we felt the Lord saying, hey, there's still work to be done, and we want you back there. So there was a call from the Bible College, the CCTB, saying, would you like to come back? Or would you like to be the principal, the boss of the college? And we thought, well, we need to think about this. This is a big one. But after much prayer and getting advice, we felt, yes, this is the right thing for us.
Yes, we are excited. I'm excited. And I'm excited to be going again on an adventure with God and being able to go back to Bangladesh. There's also a mixture of grief and sadness, leaving our children here and leaving Mum and Dad. And I think that's part of the course. And it's not easy, it's hard. I've contemplated leaving our garden, our home, which I love, and but I think they are temporary things. It's, I'm not so troubled by that.
How many have been to Bangladesh? Yeah, just that is a terrible place. You know, every time I've flown out of Bangladesh, it's like I'm just so relieved. And you fly into Bangladesh and it looks like a bombed out city. It's one of the poorest in the world. And for Sally and Richard to go back up there, goodness me. I think you could see Sally's honesty. So we as a church, we support Transcend, the Osbournes. We could go through a whole list of names. And what we have up here in the front, which you can see later, is their workers. And it's on this big, well, it's not that big, but this kind of framed photo here that we had specially done. So please go and have a look at that. Our generosity goes to people like Richard and Sally. It's absolutely awesome. Yeah. So there you are, friends. Fill those cans, okay? You good? Ruby's not good. She's down with cold and she's in Christchurch. So she's off down seeing her mother, but she went down full of it. I meant the cold. So there you have it. Yeah, I'll have that. Thanks, Jace. She gets back on Monday. Thank you. Thanks, Jason. I had a good time in that lakeside hotel in Rotorua during the week, Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, speaking to the Salvation Army officers. As I said in the newsletter, it's hard doing this ministry stuff. Anyway, just say hello to someone while I just calm down a little bit. Go to it. I'm too warm now. Okay, friends, here we go. What's that? Oh, it's cool, yeah. Yeah, here we go. I want to just read out from Joshua. So if you have your iPads, your iPhones, or your Bibles, We're doing this series in Joshua, and it just so happens it's quite good, actually, that the passage that, Will, you've had a haircut. Yes, okay. you think? we're doing this series in Joshua, and it just so happens, actually, the passage, I think, lends itself really well to this emphasis on the global revolution, which we will also be picking up on the first two Sundays in August, because we have someone from the slums of Bangkok with us in the first 2 weeks, someone from the Middle East working with Muslims. So the first two, it's great. Do you think it's good? Yeah. So here we go, chapter 2. And Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly from, everyone say that word? As spies, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. And they went and came into the house of a prostitute, whose name was Rahab, and lodged there, most surprising. And it was told to the king of Jericho, behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, true, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax, as you do. And she had laid an order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out. And before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og. Probably about number 25 on children's list, I'd imagine. Whom you devoted to destruction. As soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any person because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I've dealt kindly with you, you will also deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign, that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. And the men said to her, our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterward you may go your way. And the men said to her, we will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Okay, we'll leave it there. Strange story. Strange story? The first incident. By the way, temperature. How are we doing temperature-wise? Is it cold or not? Did we turn the heaters off or on? Where are we up to now? Are they? I don't know. Shall we just move on? Okay. Two men, two nice Hebrew boys, end up in a brothel. That is the first recorded event of the Israelites in the Promised Land. Two nice Hebrew boys in a brothel. What do you think about this? Tell the person next to you. Go to it. Is it cop? Is it? Okay, guys. I mean, you know the story of the Israelites. That, they were enslaved to Pharaoh, yes? And then there was a power encounter. And then the Israelites were liberated. Are you up with this? And then they were in the wilderness for 40 years. In the wilderness, they learnt the lessons of liberation. Then they all got to the banks of the river. And Joshua is the kind of guy who says, this river is made for crossing. But he doesn't go initially. Instead, he sends 007 and 008. And these two dynamic spies, this dynamic duo, they head across the water, and like all good spies, they end up with a lady of the night. I'm just telling the story how it is. And they end up with this lady of the night. And I don't know about you, but you kind of think, gosh, this is the very first episode of the Israelites in the famous Promised Land. And it concerns, as I said, two nice Hebrew boys in a brothel. So the next question is, what is God trying to tell us and the Israelites? I don't know where you're up to on this one. Where I'm up to on this one is this. That the promised land was not about the Israelites. And the promised land was not about the land. It was about broken people. Is that right? It's about Rahab. And this is what God said right at the beginning to the Israelites. I mean, come with me to Genesis chapter 12. Okay? Genesis 12. If you come with me to Genesis 12 and verse 1. Genesis 12 verse 1. What does it say here? It says, now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land I will show you. Why go to the land? And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. And him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families, even Rahab's family, will be blessed. But you see, what happened when the Israelites finally all got over into the promised land, they forgot that it was about the Rahabs. And the Israelites, they thought it was about them and the land. And so what happened to the Israelites when they finally got over was that instead of being a light to broken people, they became providers of darkness. Did you get that? Instead of being light to the Rahabs, to broken people, the Israelites eventually became providers of darkness, like every other nation. And so they were disciplined and they were judged. And God's blessing lifted off them. And you see, that's the amazing thing that can happen to us. That somehow we think it's about us. You know? And we think it's about, you know, New Zealand. Or we think it's about our church. When the whole message of the Bible is that it's about people across the water. Across the water, there's Rahab. And there's people across the water. Now, it is about people across the room. And it is about people across our street. But it's also about people across the water. I didn't mean Australia. But it's also about people across the water, the Rahabs. Are you with me? And you see, the early disciples, they didn't get it either. Come with me to Acts. Come with me to the book of Acts. Okay? Come with me to Acts. Acts 1 verse 6. So Jesus is just about to ascend, to go into heaven. It's not really up, it's into, but that's another topic. I've just lost my Bible. And what does it say in verse 6? So when they had come together, they asked him, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? It's all about us. It's all about Israel. And he said to them, it is not for you to know the times or the seasons that the Father has fixed by his own authority, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, yes, across the street, but also Judea, Samaria, and then to the ends of the earth. And when he had said these things, as they were looking on, he was lifted up. People, tell me, what were the last five words that Jesus said on planet Earth? Say it again. Yeah, across the water. To broken people like Rahab. Can you see why it's about the self-denial thing? The global revolution. It's absolutely fantastic. You know, I want to share some stories. By the way, the scary thing about Acts is that these disciples, they had been with Jesus for 3 years and they never got it. They had prayed with him, talked with him, walked with him, sat with him, ate with him. They had done time and they never got it. They always thought it was about them and the land and Israel, and they never got it. And that's the scary thing with us, that we can spend all this time with Jesus and never get it, that it's about the Rahabs across the water. Last year, I had the privilege of speaking to the Presbyterian Assembly, their National Assembly. My goodness me, there's a story in that. And I had to give 4 keynote messages. So in my preparation, I did some research on the Presbyterian movement in New Zealand. And I came across this really good story about Norman and Mary MacLeod. Have I told this? You wouldn't remember anyway. And Norman and Mary, I think it was about when they were 40, they built a ship. Okay? And they built this ship, and they got some of their church members, and they went to, I think it was a part of America, across the water, to tell other people about Jesus. When they got to 71, they thought, let's go to Adelaide, Australia, and tell the people in Adelaide, across the water, about Jesus. 71? When Norman got to 74, he and Mary talked to each other and they said, let's go to New Zealand now. We'll build another ship and we'll cross the water and we'll go tell those Kiwis over there, whoever they were in those days, about Jesus. And you know, that's what they did. And when I heard and read that story, I thought, Stokes, when I'm 74, will I be a builder of ships? Will I be the kind of guy who crosses the water? Because when I think of Norman and Mary, they didn't just reach their potential at 74, they exceeded it. At 74? Don't you think that's brilliant? I thought that was an amazing story. And then, you know, I mean, if you don't mind, because when you, this global revolution stuff is just full of stories. I mean, our story, you know our story that Ruby and I, in 1985, we looked at each other and we said to ourselves, let's live dangerously. Let's write a dangerous story with our lives. Let's not take a walk on the mild side. Let's take a walk on the wild side. Let's not go bland and tame. Let's be untamed. No, we did. So we thought, where's a really dangerous place to go to? So we did some research. And where we got to was the squatter communities of the two-thirds world. And I'll be honest with you guys, it was the best chapter thus far of our lives. It was fantastic. I mean, to give a chapter of your lives away to people across the water, no regrets. Absolutely fantastic. So I have a dream that, you know, our church will be the kind of church where God will send people here and we'll sharpen them up and then we'll kick them out. And we'll send them across the water. The last church I pastored, in the 5 years that I was there, we sent out a dozen. Very biblical. So I'd love to see our best go across the water. Yes? Oh. I told you I'm not an envisionary type. So that's our story, going across the water. But not all of us are meant to go. Sigh of relief. But we can still have a vital part, yes? What about this story? True story. I don't know if you've heard this one. It's brilliant. There was a newbie, fresh, just become a follower of Jesus. The name is Doug. He's 25. And Doug, he's full of, you know, zeal, passion, wanting to make a difference in the world. And one day, his pastor, youth pastor, came up and said to Doug, "So Doug, what are you doing about the people across the water?" And Doug said, "Oh, I'm praying for the world every day." And the youth pastor said, "It's way too big. Why don't you just pick one continent?" So he decided to pick the African continent. Have you heard this? It's great. Pick the African continent. And then the youth pastor said to Doug, "And pray every day for 6 months." So Doug starts praying for a particular country, actually, on the African continent, and he's praying for this country every day for 6 months. I think it's about 6 weeks in, and he's at a business breakfast. And there is a guest speaker up front, a big, black, beautiful woman, and he can't keep his eyes off her. Anyway, so can't keep his eyes off her. She notices this. So at the end of the breakfast, she goes up to Doug, beelines for him, and said, "I just noticed," she put it politely, "that you were just staring at me." And he said, "You would not believe it. I have been praying for your country every day for 6 weeks. And now you're here, most unexpectedly. This is amazing." And you see, she could see the absolute look of naive delight in his eyes. So do you know what she says? "Why don't you come visit?" And he thinks to himself, who's not to want to do that? So he's a businessman, so he has his own discretionary funds. So he pays out, grabs a ticket, flies over to her particular country. She's running the biggest orphanage in the country. So he's over there across the water, and he's touching, smelling, feeling, getting in contact with flesh and blood poverty. It's not textbook poverty. He's not reading it. He's smelling it, feeling it, touching it. And his heart breaks. His heart breaks for people across the water. So he comes back home. I don't know how this happened. 6 months isn't up yet. He's a businessman, got a few clues. So he rings up the pharmaceutical companies in his state and says, "Have you got any spare, healthy, legal drugs?" They send him a container full. He has the container flowing over to the orphanage. The 6 months aren't up, and he's still praying every day. She gets the container at the other end. She gets the container, and she's blown away. So she decides to put on a big celebration and invites the president of the country. She rings him up, Doug, and says, "We're putting on this big event. I want you to be here." He quickly flies over. 6 months are not up. He gets over. He is planted, seated next to the president. After the celebration, he turns to the president and he says, "You have political prisoners in this country, don't you?" And the president says, "Yes." And Doug says, "Set them free." And the president does. He's praying every day. He gets back to his country. Doug gets back to his country. 6 months, not up yet. And suddenly he gets a phone call. The phone call is from the president of that country. "I am forming a cabinet. I need to take prayerful advice. Will you come back over? I need to hear what you think." Is that an amazing story? Is that an amazing story? So this is Doug as a businessman in a normal church like this. But that's what happened. That's his story. Don't you think it's great? So here's Norman and Mary at 74, and they're still building ships and exceeding their potential. There's little old Ruby and I, who are these super introverts who are incredibly shy and insecure. And we do our little bit. And there's Doug, who's just a newbie fresh off the block, as a 25-year-old. And you think, where does this stop? One final story. Are you up for one more? I was speaking, some of you might have been there at Mystery Creek. You know, is it Easter? BYM. And one of the years that I did there, there was another speaker from America. And I don't know if you've been there. There's about 4,000 gross teenagers. And you have to actually walk out on a catwalk. And it's the most scariest thing, you know. And then you're all alone out there. And so anyway, there was this guy from America. He was the other communicator. So I was there, and I started telling the story. Get this. You see, when I was in Christchurch some time ago, I always make it a point of visiting the Christian bookstore, Mana Bookstore, on Manchester Street, that is now no longer there. And on this particular day a few years ago, I raced into the bookstore, and the manager, who knows me well, Bruce is his name, he came racing out and he said, "Mick, I've got a book for you. It's free." So he gave me this book. I grabbed the book, tore off to the airport to fly back up here. On the flight home, I read the book, skim read. It was a very short book. Reading this book, I was absolutely blown away. You see, there was this boy, true story, had a mum. The boy had to do a school project on contemporary slavery issues across the water. And he said to his mum, "Oh, Mum, there are no slaves today." And the mum said, "Do a Google search on contemporary slave issues." So he hits the computer and he's doing a Google search, and he notices that there are 28 million people today in enforced slavery, most of them children. And he chances upon the story of Kunmani in India, where 6 days a week, from early morning to late at night, she has to work in a paper bag, not in a paper, in a cigarette factory. And her job is to sort of, with her broken, gnarled and twisted fingers, stump the end of 2,000 cigarettes in a day. As she gets behind, a supervisor with a bit of 2x3 whacks her around the body. She's been doing this since the age of 3. And she gets 75 cents a week that goes to her alcoholic father. So this young boy is doing this school project, chances upon the story about Kunmani, and his heart breaks for people across the water. So his heart breaks, so what does he do? Well, he starts up a movement. And you've probably heard this. And he called the movement Loose Change to Loosen the Chains. Have you heard of it? Loose Change. Because he worked out that in the homes of his country, there were probably millions and millions and millions of dollars in loose change. So he started up this movement that people would give their loose change, like we will, to loosen the chains. And millions upon millions came in. When I was telling the story at Mystery Creek, I said, "Oh, Zach Hunter's age was 14 when he started this movement." And I was blown away by that. 14? In other words, with this global Jesus revolution stuff, there's no age limit. 14? And the American guy, who was the other communicator, he knew this guy, Zach. So he came up to me after I'd spoken. He said, "Nah." He said, "Zach, he wasn't 14. He was 12. That is incredible. So I've got to finish, people. I have a heartbeat for people across the water. And I reckon all of us here can write a dangerous story with our lives for people across the water. And you could be 74. And you can be a businessman like Doug. And you can be like Ruby and I, who are all very deeply insecure and shy. Or you could be like a Zach Hunter at the age of 12. But here's the thing, those are our stories. So don't you get off on ours. We had to work bloody hard for those stories, and forgive the French. It was a lot of hard work. I mean, Doug put in a lot of hard yards. And Norman and Mary, a lot of hard yards. And Ruby and I, we had to work hard for our story. And Zach, he worked hard for his story. We've got to work hard for our stories. It will cost us dearly, but it's the best thing to be there for people across the water. The churches that sign on for the Rahabs, for the broken people across the water, are the churches who are blessed. So we're going to take communion, and we're going to do it Anglican style. Is that okay? What I mean by this is that we're going to have two rows. And I want you to take your cup and your bit of bread. And as you take your bread and as you take your cup, stand to the side and take it. And take into your heart the story that Jesus wrote and accost him dearly. And his story was all on behalf of broken people. There was a lot of self-denial with Jesus' story. Take that story into your story. And then move around and pick up a watering can, which is only a symbol of a little story of self-denial. And then make your way to your seat. And while you're up here, look at the photos of these people who are writing their story. And let your story mesh and merge with their story. So that's what we're going to do. I can't think of anything better this morning. Yes? So here we have the bread and the cup. And Jesus allowed his story to be interrupted at 33. And allowed his life to come to an end as he knew it. I think he enjoyed being human and smelling the flowers and touching the trees and walking the mountains. But he knew that at the end of the day it wasn't about those things, it was about Rahab, the broken people. And he had to find a way to take their brokenness into himself, that they might be healed and restored. And Rahab, arguably she experienced a God-sized miracle, and her life changed. So allow yourself to be broken. For the sake of Rahabs and people across the water. Take Jesus' story into your story as you come up the front. And then come behind the table and take the can. And as you take one of these little cups, he loves you. He has a very soft spot for you. He has much affection for you. He thinks you're okay. And he just doesn't want you to reach your potential. In him, he wants you to exceed it. For the sake of others. This is just brilliant. So people come up, enjoy, feast, be filled. Yeah. Is that cool? Let's pray. Jesus, you have been so very, very good. Your work has been excellent. And you have thought about us from beginning to end. And in one sense, we are the apple of your eye. But your heart is also for other people across the water. And we, as we love you, want to love what you love, and you love the Rahabs. Help us to write a global mission revolutionary story with our lives. for people across the water. And may it cost us something. And as we take this cup and as we take this bread, remind us of that cost for the sake of others. In your wonderful name, amen. Amen. So just file out from, we'll go start from the back, file out and come and form single aisles and enjoy the feast.